called Kindness by Naomi Shihab Nye. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go, so you know how desolate the landscape can be between regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for." And then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. So I want to start my sermon with a word on what kind of kindness I'm talking about today. Today, this actual day, as we continue to ride the waves of a global pandemic and the roller coaster of reckless responses by our president and other public officials, recklessness that has led to thousands of avoidable deaths, terrible losses whose aggregate patterns mirror the fault lines of race and class in our country. Today, on this day, what does it mean to talk about kindness as the powerful Black Lives Matter movement sweeps across the nation once again, reignited by the murder of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and countless others? With all this happening, what does it mean to talk about kindness? To have something meaningful to say about kindness right now means I will not be talking about being courteous or polite or nice. Though these are all lovely ways to be, and I'm not necessarily knocking them, by all means, let's be polite and nice to each other. Random acts of kindness, genuinely inquiring after a neighbor's well-being, letting a harried parent with grumpy children cut the line. These simple kindnesses help us get through the day, help us feel a little more connected with each other. But our desire for civility must not prevent us from heeding the fierce and urgent anger of the Black Lives Matter protesters. To call for kindness right now is not to plug our ears to these prophetic calls for justice. Today I'm talking about the kind of kindness that does not shy away from righteous ruckus, that leaves room for and responds to our shared brokenness. Kindness that is less gentle sweetness and more tough love. This kind of kindness grows out of the knowledge that life is both precious and precarious, seasoned with loss and our yearning to belong. Naomi Shihab Nye writes, "Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. All this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between regions of kindness." In an interview, Naomi Shihab Nye told the story of how this poem came to her. She and her husband were on their honeymoon, riding the bus in Colombia when they were robbed of everything. And someone else who was on the bus with them was killed. "He is the Indian in the poem," she explained to the interviewer. After this terrible incident, she and her husband were stranded and stricken in a little town, completely unsure of what to do next, with no money, no passports, nowhere to go. A man noticed their distress and came up to them, asking them kindly, "What happened to you?" in Spanish. He listened to them try to explain, and he looked so sad. And he said to them, "I'm very, very sorry that happened," in Spanish. And he went and sat with them in a little plaza. And then, while her husband hitchhiked to the next largest town to reinstate their traveler's checks, she took a notebook and a pencil from her back pocket, all she had with her. She took those things and she wrote down this poem about kindness. "Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness," Nye writes in the poem, "you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you. How he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive." We might feel a little bit like Naomi Shihab Nye after that terrible bus ride right now. We might feel a little like how she felt. We might feel like we've been robbed in this pandemic, robbed of the company of family and friends, some of us robbed of our livelihoods. We might feel a little lost in this pandemic, stranded in a strange land where we cannot congregate to mourn, to worship, to celebrate. In a strange land where our hold on certainty is more tenuous than ever. And like the passengers on that bus in Colombia who saw that man killed, we are watching as people are dying of a terrible virus and a terrible system. Naomi Shihab Nye was robbed. Another passenger on the bus she was on was killed, and then sitting alone with a kind stranger in a plaza, thousands of miles from her home with nothing but a notebook and a pencil, she wrote a poem about kindness. We can be like the poet, even if we are lost or scared. We can record kindness. We can collect the evidence that goodness persists amidst loss and hurt. I want to offer you some of this evidence this morning. There is a restaurant in Minneapolis that was severely damaged by fires set by protesters in the wake of George Floyd's murder. This restaurant is a family-owned Bangladeshi Indian restaurant called Gandhi Mahal, named after Gandhi. Ruhel Islam, the father in the family, made a public statement the day after the fire saying, "We can rebuild a building, but we cannot rebuild a human. The community is still here, and we can work together to rebuild." The protests continued in the days following, still in the vicinity of the restaurant, and the Islam family continued to lend their support. They opened up a room in their restaurant to medics, who set up a makeshift field hospital for a couple of days, which treated at least 200 people suffering from tear gas or rubber bullet wounds. They cooked for them and fed them too, dal, rice, and naan. Another member of the family, Hafsa Islam, said, "We were just trying to do what we could to help our community. Sure, we had our business. Sure, we were trying to keep our kitchen open. But more than anything, we were concerned for our people." What the Islam family did was incredibly kind, offering their space so people could be cared for, feeding people, publicly supporting the cause. Their testimony made all the more meaningful by the fact that their restaurant was damaged in the fire. This is not a naive kindness. Ruhel Islam shared with reporters that the unrest in Minneapolis reminds him of his childhood in Bangladesh, where he lived through a dictatorship. Two of his fellow students, he shared, were killed by the police during that time. He said, "We grew up in a traumatic police state, so I'm familiar with this type of situation." We are hearing the cries from protesters to defund the police, to abolish prisons. What do these demands mean? Scholar Ruth Wilson Gilmore explains that at the heart of these demands is the understanding that the police and punishment system in this country has encroached into too many corners of people's lives, especially the lives of poor people and people of color. And also, these demands, at the heart of these demands is the belief that we can change this. We can respond to harm, not with policing and punishment, but rather with care and community. Our Universalist faith's origins include the belief that none of us is destined to hell, that all our human souls are saved, that all are worthy of God's eternal love. The root of our faith tradition asks us to believe, theist or non-theist, that we are all capable of goodness. We are all worthy of love and the chance to redeem ourselves from our inevitable failings. Asks us to believe that none of us is expendable. And so, as Unitarian Universalists, we are called to participate in this discussion about abolition. In the coming months, I hope we can continue this conversation as a church community and engage with it in the wider world. We have been called time and time again to witness and stop the oppressive forces which steal the breath and plans of our fellow humans. We have been called to believe in kindness, even in the midst of violence and uncertainty. And we are called to be like the Islam family, sharing what resources we have, remembering always that lives are more precious than business and property, offering kindness that is wise to the pain of the world. May we find this kindness through love in community with one another. With that, my sermon this morning ends, and we will transition to an affirmation of mutual